Welcome to episode 87 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. This is Eric Barzeski. Joining me, Alan Olson. You're back in Minnesota this week, right?
Back home. And it's 60s and above all week. Very nice.
Great. Well, this week we're going to talk about Paula Creamer. We're going to talk about Anthony Kim. We're going to talk about drug testing. Then we're going to have an interview with Steve Pelosek of Titleist about the AP1 and AP2 irons. In our beating ball segment, we're going to talk about Torrey Pines and a par 3 there. A little bit about the groove rule and the winner of the Torrey Pines U.S. Open Hacker Contest. So our first story here in Off the Tee, Paula Creamer has ended Lorena Ochoa's streak of winning four. She was going for five LPGA Tour starts in a row. Paula Creamer ends up gagging on a couple of 2 feet or less putts to go into a playoff with Julie Inkster. She actually bogeyed the 18th hole while Julie Inkster birdied it to force the playoff. Then Paula Creamer buries an 8-foot putt on the second playoff hole to win on Sunday, making the LPGA Tour by far the more interesting tournament to watch this weekend.
Much, much more interesting. It was kind of odd to see, well, I shouldn't say odd, it was actually really nice to see live golf on ESPN2 this weekend.
That's right. Paula Creamer, of course, last week kind of gagged away. I mean, she left about a 6-foot putt 6 inches short against Annika Sorenstam in a playoff, but 2 weeks in a row in a playoff. So when she saw it and picks up her 6th career win and her first without her parents there in attendance.
Yeah, they made a little bit of a deal about it. You know, she's moving out on her own and whatnot. And cool, she's 21. Move on.
Paula Creamer again, her 6th victory, and Lorena Ochoa finished 5 shots back in 5th place or something like that. So
yeah, did not play very well at all that week. Pretty much all week.
No, I think a 269 in the final round, but not enough to get it done. Anthony Kim, more than enough to get it done. We talked about Lorena Ochoa losing by 5. He wins by 5 in the Wachovia Championship, so a top-tier event. Of course, Tiger was the defending champion out with his knee. Anthony Kim, a good performance. Ben Curtis set a course record, I believe, on Sunday, but was too far back. Netted him a second-place finish, but was too far back to put any real pressure on Anthony Kim.
Very, very impressive 4 days of golf from Anthony Kim. I mean, if you're looking for potentially the next big American star, I mean, he could very well be it.
Yeah, more players in their 20s have already won PGA Tour events this year than all of last year now. Last week with Adam Scott winning, tied it. This week with Anthony Kim, puts it over the top.
Yeah, quite impressive. I mean, we are seeing, I don't want to say changing of the guard, but yeah, I mean, you're getting a lot of guys sub, 30 and under winning now rather than, some of the other guys that we've seen the last few years.
Well, these are the kind of guys that I talked about a couple weeks ago about some of the young stars on the American side perhaps wanting to prove themselves to the world in the Ryder Cup and perhaps making it a little more competitive. We need to get rid of the Davis Loves and the Fred Couples and, the old guard, to use your terms. And Anthony Kim, certainly not part of the old guard.
No, not at all. And that's good for golf. I mean, it's going to bring in younger people to, that are going to watch golf. If they see people, about their own age, they're not going to care about people that are, unfortunately, 35 to 40 years old.
Right. And Anthony Kim has toned down his mouth a little bit. When he first burst onto the scene last year, he'd have 1 or 2 good rounds of tournament. So he was good for kind of a best ball league that we were running at the time, a fantasy league. But he ran his mouth off and said that he wanted to beat up on Tiger Woods and take over the number one spot. And, that's something you just generally don't do your first year out.
No, not really. But I mean, it was quite an impressive display of golf. It just got a little boring, just the fact that he had that huge lead. But I mean, watching him cruise around the golf course, I mean, that kid can hit it a mile.
Yeah, he chokes down when he hits it a mile too. He took his lumps where he had to, took a bogey where he had to, but otherwise played well. 11 putts in the front nine, I believe, on the Sunday. That'll get it done every week. So.
Oh yeah, I mean,
I'd say he might not win within the next 5 years, but I was thinking, 5 years out would be his first win. But the wording on the forum was within the next 5 years, so technically I was still right.
And that's good.
Drug testing delayed for the British Open. So if you're on drugs, I guess you have another year where you can play in the British Open without being caught.
Very interesting to see, because there was the big hubbub of, oh, we got drug testing and we're doing all this and doing all that. Now it has to be delayed because some international players have not been exposed to doping education programs.
That's the bizarre thing. Okay, so there's whole classes of drugs. There's doping and that kind of thing. And then there's other stuff. Couldn't they test for like the 3 or 4 super bad ones that are kind of a duh thing. You know, couldn't they test for steroids and a few of the, you know, again, duh stuff and not some of those, you know, oh, well, it was in my apple juice. I would think they could. I don't know why they need to push the entire thing back just because some of the more confusing ones haven't been told to the players.
I mean, even then, though, I mean, they've got the list out. They've had the list out for quite a while. It's like, okay, these are the 20 things you can't take.
It's more than 20, but...
Well, yeah, but I mean, they're making it a little bit more difficult than what it should be.
Yeah, it says if the Open was in October, we would probably do drug testing this year. I don't know. It's okay.
How much more work are they going to? I mean, how much more work are they going to do from July to October? I mean,
right.
Do they have to like print up little cards or?
And most of the drugs. I mean, if you educate the guys next week, wouldn't any of those funny drugs that, you know, might be in someone's apple juice, wouldn't most of those kinds of things be out of the player system by then anyway? You know, so if you are taking it unknowingly or without consulting your doctor, and then you discover, oh, I shouldn't be, and you stop, wouldn't that be out of your system by then? I would think.
Yeah, I mean, just to have all the, to come out, you know, a little while ago and say, oh, we're going to have drug testing. Oh, not for this year's British Open, though.
Well, next year, and hopefully the fall and the second half of the year on the PGA Tour, we'll see something. We'll see. We'll be right back with Steve Pelasek, so stay tuned.
I mark my tie list with a black dot left of the number, with blue brackets around the tie list.
First, I black out the number, and then I make the Kelly Green 13.
Un pequeño círculo.
A black line over the Pro V1X.
Black dot over the 9.
For 20 years, a black dot over the tee.
Out on tour.
It's not how you mark your golf ball.
It's how you mark your tie list.
How do you mark your tie list?
All right, and this week we're talking with Vice President of Titleist Golf Club Sales and Marketing, Steve Pelasek. Hello.
Hello.
We're going to be talking about the AP, which stands for Advanced Performance for the Irons. We had a review of the AP2 a week or two ago. The AP1s should be up later this week. The AP irons aren't your typical Titleist irons of what we've kind of come to know and understand for the past 10 years. So how did they come about? Was it a fresh start, or was it based on maybe some Cobra stuff, or where did it come from?
Fresh start? You know, I would say... yes and no, fresh start. You know, a lot of our stuff is, I would say, it tends to be more evolutionary than revolutionary necessarily, because we continue to, you know, to focus on a certain part of the golf audience. So somewhat of a fresh start, but we also, you know, we've made some very good products in recent history, and, you know, you're not the number one iron on the PGA Tour, for example, without having made some pretty good stuff. And so what we wanted to do really more with the AP irons was maybe just appeal to a little broader audience. So we asked, you know, a lot of golfers, you know, what do you think of Titleist irons? And the overwhelming feedback, Eric, was it was pretty consistent. You know, hey, I love your brand, I love your stuff, but, you know, perhaps if it was a little easier to hit, I'd take a closer look. And so we were presented with this somewhat unique challenge of we wanted to make sure that, you know, we continued to make the highest performance irons we could, while at the same time building in a few things that perhaps some folks felt were missing, just not enough to get them over the hump. And so really that is literally what we did, was, okay, what do we do well and what can we add? And let's make sure that when we add a little forgiveness, we continue to keep the things that we know we do well and that people love us for. The overwhelming feedback, again, on what do we do well and what do they like and what do they look, you know, what do good players look for in an iron was feel. Which was kind of interesting to me. It's kind of hard to measure feel, kind of hard to quantify it, but it just consistently kept coming back. I like the look of your product, but more than anything, I think your stuff feels the best. And so we were presented with this challenge to try to develop a new set of advanced performance irons, build in a little bit more forgiveness. We also felt there was an opportunity for us to show a little bit more technology, but keep the same good look at address, and by all means, keep feel, which sometimes isn't that easy when you're trying to build in a little forgiveness. And so when you look at the AP irons in particular, you'll see lots of effort to do everything that I just described, is building a little bit more modern forgiveness, but keep playability, keep shot control, distance control, and by all means, keep great feel in the iron. So a little bit of a fresh start in the sense that we wanted to be a little broader, but absolutely evolutionary in the sense that we wanted to keep doing all the things that we knew people liked about us.
Okay, you've targeted some of the higher, or necessarily high handicappers, but the mid handicappers, and, you know, up to the 15 and 18 range or so up to there, with the 804s, the 775s, even maybe to some extent the 755s, even though you had tour players with those as well. How does the AP1 in this case achieve something or give something back to those players that you didn't give them with the 775s and the 804s?
Well, I think a couple of, that's a very good question. You know, we one of the things that we were concerned about, Eric, overall with our iron product line of the last couple of years was it was getting so broad. You know, we had, I think it was 16 models of irons go through the Darrell survey last year on the PGA Tour. So we kind of felt like all the irons we were making were very good product, but we started to get, again, feedback from consumers that there's a little bit of confusion about which one's for me. And so in many cases, you know, what AP1 does more than anything is it consolidates all those models and focuses them all on one model that is clearly our best effort to design an iron that, again, looks good. It feels good, but can be played by, you know, in AP1's case, any player. I would qualify any serious golfer. You don't have, when we say serious golfer, we don't mean just a tour player or a national competitive player. We say anybody who takes their game seriously. And that, you know, if you're playing hard every weekend trying to get better at your game, you're in our, we want to make a Titleist iron that could work for you. And AP1 is our best effort ever, in my opinion, by far to make that. You know, it's a little bit bigger. It's got a little bit more offset. It's got every piece of modern technology we can put into an iron to, again, make a club that's very playable, but, you know, has tremendous feel, you know, because it just kept coming back from consumers that's what was important to them. So, you know, I just think the overall package is, you know, it's a little bit more modern, maybe a little jazzier in its look. You know, the technologies, again, we just poured our hearts and souls into making this thing do everything we wanted it to. And fortunately, you know, you never know till you get a chance for consumers to hit it. And the response has been unbelievable for both AP1 and AP2. So, you know, I like to think that maybe they're great products, but I also think that the awareness is perhaps better than we've had in the past, you know, by consolidating the line down to these clear, you know, these four models, the two Zs and then AP1 and AP2. I think it's easier for people to understand the line now. And when you get to choosing the one out of four instead of maybe one out of 16, lo and behold, you find that it's a darn good iron. So I think all those things contribute to some initial success so far.
All right, I want to hit on that again in a later question, but you talked about two, you know, you have four models of iron right now, and it's been my understanding that the APs are vastly outselling the other two, and even exceeding the ambitious goals that you guys had set for yourselves.
Yep.
You almost have four, for the average consumer, you almost have the two irons, and that pretty much covers your entire range, because you have tour play with the AP2, and Adam's got a longtime muscleback player moving to that. So the ZM and the ZB, do you almost see them phasing out? Not necessarily going with just two irons, but do you see those almost?
Yeah, I know what you're getting at. I don't see them phasing out, but I do think there's a phenomenon happening with AP2, and we've talked about it, in that AP2 is it's a forged iron, but it's a very modern, contemporary forged iron that, again, happens to be able to keep all the things that forged players like, but it does build in some technology that has never been built into a forging before. So it's giving players who prefer the look and feel of a forging the opportunity to maybe perhaps take advantage of some new technologies that weren't made available in that kind of club before. But the Zs, you know, they're going to be around. We did I did a count last week. We had 42 sets of irons in play on the PGA Tour, and 11 of them were still what you would consider, you know, classic muscle-back, chrome-plated carbon forgings. You know, still 25% of our tour staff is preferring that. Now, that's down from a year ago significantly because of the presence of AP2, but it's still at 25%. So, you know, there's a place for those. That just,
how do those numbers look to consumers?
Yes. Nowhere near 25%. You know, we had figured, you know, we basically categorize the size of the, or quantify the size of the traditional forged blade market for us at, you know, about 10% of the overall iron market, you know, and we're a company that somewhat, you know, that focuses on that. So it's about 10, and I would say, yeah, it probably is dwindling a little, but it also tends to go in cycles. Right now, you know, our sales are, in fact, you know, between ZB and ZM, you know, they're, I think they're 12 or 13% of our sales. So we're close to 90% between AP1 and AP2.
Tell me about the decision to put Project X shafts, which is the first stock in AP2, and then going with the high launch shaft in the AP1. Was that about the buzz? Did they fit? Because I had heard that Project X shaft was, I think Dynamic Gold is long been the standard, but not necessarily the best fit for a lot of players.
Yeah.
Did the club heads match up with those shafts, or was it about getting people away from maybe the Dynamic Gold, which a lot of players honestly...
No, you know, those discussions, Eric, are always led by the research and development group. Those are overwhelmingly decisions made based on performance. In the case of Dynamic Gold High Launch, or in the case of AP1, you know, we were looking for a shaft that was perhaps a little bit lighter than Dynamic Gold and a little bit more responsive, you know, just a little bit more responsive to the tip perhaps, and just working with the True Temper folks. You know, they had been working on the high launch shaft for a little while and it just worked. You know, they came to us with it and said, this might be exactly what you're looking for. And when we tried it and we went through that, that's all a consumer testing process there, not necessarily a tour testing process, because it, the tour guys have so many unique preferences. You know, we don't necessarily put a stock shaft or make a stock shaft choice based on what, you know, directly on tour feedback, because they're going to get what they want custom built anyway. And even at the consumer level, you know, we're up to 40% of our iron sales, Eric, are custom made. So the, even the term stock these days perhaps means a little less than it used to, but it is your most common shaft. And this, you know, you do sell more stock than custom, but we sell a lot of custom stuff. But we did like Dynamic Gold High Launch the best of all the shafts that we tried. And, you know, we narrowed it down to four or five, and it was pretty clear winner in that case, again, because just a little bit lighter weight than Dynamic Gold and a little more responsiveness in the tip. And then for AT2, that was a pretty close race. That was neck and neck between Dynamic Gold and Project X, but just a slight preference to Project X. And we liked that. You know, hey, it fit in every way, but that was a performance-based decision.
And we'll talk more, or I'll talk with someone else later in the year with Titleist about the fitting works and the club fitting and the interchangeable shaft technology you have on your fitting cart. So that segues into the last question I have. In that club fitting, it's always been a big deal to Titleist, and I know you guys believe very strongly that you have to be fit or else any iron isn't going to perform very well for you. It doesn't matter if it's got all the technology in the world, it's not going to work for you if it's not fit for you and your swing. And I've gotten a lot of questions from people who are, maybe they feel that they're on the cusp of, you know, maybe they're a higher handicapper, but they're not sure if they can hit the AP1, or they're between an AP1 and an AP2 and they're not sure which direction to go. They're like a 12, but they want to be an 8 and think they can get there. But what do you recommend to these people? I mean, I've always said, you know, go hit them and see, but what would you say to the golfers on the cusp in making the decision?
Absolutely. You have to get fit. And the SureFit system is terrific in that it does allow you to try all those things very easily, very quickly. We've worked real hard to try and get a real broad, and our network of fitters, we think, is the best in the industry, and you can find them. You can go to fittingworks.com, you can find a fitter, and so there's places to go and try them both clearly. I would encourage everyone to do that. If you find you're a tweener, you know, I think it just, there are different features built into each iron, and I would go back to the basics of that. Of almost the, if you read the brochures, you read the copy, you read the reviews, each iron does have sort of a central focus. And in AP1's case, you know, it is a little bit bigger iron. It is a little bit more forgiving. If you're concerned about those kinds of things, if forgiveness is your issue, you know, hey, solid contact or whatever you want to call it, I would lean toward AP1. AP2 is, you know, in a sense, you know, it's its little brother. It's a little smaller package, but perhaps a little bit more responsive. You know, if greater shot control, greater feel is basically what you're looking for in an iron, I would lean toward it. But the positions are fairly clear. You know, we don't like laying them out for handicap, you know, as much as just what is it that you're looking for? Is it you're looking for, you know, just something that's a little bit more forgiving? Absolutely lean toward AP1. If you're looking for something that's a little bit more responsive, I'd lean toward AP2. We're just tickled to death that both have a broader appeal than our irons of the past several years. And that's a great position to be in. Obviously, I don't think you can go wrong with either one, but I think you'll know too when you put it down and you try them either with a fitter and or, you know, there's demo sets all over the place, and go play some shots in situation, you know, on the golf course. I think you'll know. You'll get comfortable with one or the other.
Okay. We'd like to thank Steve Pelasek, Vice President of Titleist Golf Club Sales and Marketing, for talking with us about the AP1 and AP2 irons from Titleist. We'll be right back.
I mark my Titleist with a VJ.
I mark my ball with the Greek symbol for courage, the lambda sign.
I throw my initials on it.
Three crosses around the script.
This is my boy's initials, TP.
I mark my Titleist with my initials, Holy and Orange.
For 20 years, a black dot over the tee.
With three black dots.
Out on tour.
It's not how you mark your golf ball.
It's how you mark your Titleist.
How do you mark your Titleist?
Leading off our beating ball segment this week, Torrey Pines is going to have a short par 3 for the U.S. Open this year. Short, 183 yards. That's not short.
No, but you keep reading. See, it's the third hole measures 195 yards, but they found another tee.
Right, 142, which sits at a different angle, up in the air higher, wedge shot dead into the wind.
Yeah, it reminds a lot of people of the seventh at Pebble Beach, which is 107 yards. And I swear, I think I've heard of people hitting four irons into that green before. Yeah, that should be interesting. It's also interesting that Torrey Pines will be 7,643 yards. You know, if it plays that long on any of the days, but 142 yards, I'm looking forward to it. I like, you know, the short par three. I like it. I think short, you can kind of trick up the green. You know, you can require some super serious accuracy. And you know, if the wind is there, it's even more fun.
Yeah, I mean, you could really, really make, I mean, like you said, this could be a really fun hole. Plus, make it to where these guys aren't, I mean, they're going to have to hit half the clubs in their bag just to try to figure out what's going to work for them for that hole, depending on how the wind is and how long it is. So,
right.
Short par threes are a good thing.
Yeah.
But depending on what grooves they're going to use.
Well, we know what grooves will be using this year, and unfortunately, we know what grooves will be using next year.
You know, this seems kind of odd that the USGA came out with this big proposal, and, you know, we're going to do the less effective grooves thing starting in 2010, and then it just vanished.
Well, it was in 2009 they were proposed to start, but now they can't. They can't meet that deadline, so it's going to be 2010. To have it in effect for 2009 for the competitions, they basically would have had to have made the rule like in December or January of last year or this year, and it's now May, and we don't have anything yet. They're running out of time. You know, they have a couple of months before they have to decide, as we talked about with Steve Pelosek, when they have to make the ruling for 2010. So, I mean, they're coming up against the 2010 deadline now, because equipment makers need 12 to 18 months to spec out their irons and stuff, and the kinds of grooves they're going to put in those irons matter. Not so much for wedges, but for irons, they need the 12 to 18 months. I'm not sure. I mean, they seem gung-ho. They released scientific studies. They put them out for comment. The comment period ended in August. August was, you know, 4 months before the end of the year. I expected them to have done something, and they're not. So
it's a huge, huge idea to roll back something this large. And it just, I don't know, it just doesn't seem like they're, it's like they want to do it. They provide all the evidence to do so. And then,
well, perhaps they're working with backroom stuff with some of the,
that could be
the manufacturers, to make sure they don't sue them. You know, I don't think Titleist would sue, because Titleist is already, again, shipping conforming grooves that conform to the revised specs. So, I mean, Titleist is on board. Not in their wedges, of course, because they have the spin mold wedges and everything that still have the U-grooves. But again, most players replace their wedges fairly frequently, so not as much of an issue there as with, you know, a $1,000 set of irons. So
that's true.
All right.
Last, speaking of the new grooves, brings back the nice flyer lies.
Fun stuff. And it's true, they come back, but that's the point.
That's fun. What else is fun, too, is Golf Digest has announced the winner for their hacker, if you will, that gets to play at Torrey Pines.
Yeah, well, go figure, and no offense, but it's the guy with the terminal illness. We kind of, anyone with two brain cells to rub together kind of figured he had to win, and anyone with two heart cells to rub together probably voted for him, so.
Yeah, he received the vast majority of all the votes, and eight handicapper, he'll get to be with Matt Lauer, Tony Romo, and Justin Timberlake, and
he has about a zero in anything chance of breaking 100. I mean, the difference between a single digit and the low handicaps that I know at least Tony Romo are, I mean, he has to be at least a 1.4 or better. The difference between an 8 and a 1.4 are pretty big.
Oh, it's huge. Yeah, this guy doesn't. So, shoot for 110 and be happy.
Yeah, if Tony Romo shoots 88, this guy's not breaking 108, is my thought. So, I don't know. We'll see, especially if it's played at 7,600 yards. So,
yeah, that's a lot of driver hybrid.
He'll get a reprieve on the 142-yard par 3, but that's about it.
Into the wind.
Yeah. Good luck to you.
With a fire.
We'll be watching. That about does it for episode 87 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. For links to everything that we talked about, check our show notes out online. If you'd like to participate in our forum, do so at thesandtrap.com/forum. Sign up. It's free. Email us at podcast@thesandtrap.com if you have anything to say. If you have any questions for Steve Pelosek, you can send those to us. We'll pass them along and post the answers perhaps in our comments on the show notes. For Alan Olson, this is Eric Korseski saying, I'm predicting a 109.
Yeah.